Log Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon again, everybody, and welcome to another great episode. We're going to have here Suspense Radio. If you missed it earlier this morning, we were on 7:30 Pacific time speaking with Lisa Gardner about her book, Love No More. Now we're going to have a great show here. We're going to have Douglas Preston, Lincoln Child, best-selling authors of many books together, and they're going to be talking about their latest book, Gideon's Sword. So I'm your host, John Robb, so let's sit back and relax because a double-dose matinee here of Suspense Radio starts right now.
Welcome to my nightmare. I think you're gonna like it. I think you're gonna feel you belong.
We're going to be off and running here in about 10 minutes. Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child are going to be on to discuss their latest book here, Gideon's Sword. You probably know them because they've done many books together. Probably one of the most famous books is considered a movie. I first remembered them from reading their first book, which was entitled Riptide. And I used to, that was like when I read them way back when. It was in, you know, they've just been jamming it ever since. So Gideon's Sword actually comes out and brings a new character. So we'll be discussing that here coming up, you know, like I said, very shortly when they get on in about 10 minutes. I'm kind of scanning around the internet. I always look for different things of, you know, whether it's book publishing or news and, you know, things of that nature. And I came across something that... You know, they were talking, it was talking about self-publishing marketing as an author and what you can do in order to, you know, self-publicize yourself and things like that and saying, oh, it's fairly inexpensive, you know, you have a book. And 81% of America has a story or a book they'd like to write, but very few of them ever do it or ever get it published. And, you know, with today's day and age when you can throw things out on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and different places, Smashwords, you can just do it for free and do it real fast. You know, you can get your story out there. Now, whether or not it gets read, that's another thing. And that's where, you know, traditional publishers come in and people have a lot of money behind you because they can throw you a lot of marketing dollars with Barnes & Noble and, you know, Failing Borders or Books A Million and places like that. And they can put you in front of people that might not know who you are. Well, this site pretty much said, oh, you can get into those same places and you can do all this. And I'm not going to announce the site because I'm just going to sit there and say, if you're going to spend $700 for a press release, really, really, really stop and think and see if that's something that you really want to do. Because press releases are good in the fact of, yes, you get it out there and you might get picked up, but unless you're some kind of name with some kind of a story and you can throw it out there, spending $700 on a press release is really not the best way to spend your money on marketing, without a doubt. There's a lot of different places you can go, spend a lot less money, and reach more people. Because just because they say they send these press releases out to 1,000 places, they still have to, you know, be interested in what they're getting. And what I mean by that is, if you're sending a press release, like we've done many times, to the New York Times and Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, somebody there still has to be interested in what you're getting. Otherwise, it's useless. So you can send it out to, you know, 1 million people, but if no one's going to do anything with it, it doesn't make a difference who you sent it to. So the guarantee should be, if you're going to spend $700, you're going to make sure that you get enough views for it that you're going to get your money's worth. Because $700 is a chunk of change to spend after you just, you know, self-published your book or whatever you had to do. So try the free routes first. There's a lot of great authors and people. We've discussed it here on our show that you can go back and listen to interviews, and they're going to tell you what they've done and how they've done certain things. You know, C.J. West, L.J. Sellers, two great authors that have been on here, Joshua Graham, Star Arena. You know, they've been on here to talk about what they've done in order to make themselves more popular with people. And what I mean by popular is getting more fans in order to come and to read their stuff. So, like I said, really, really beware of those types of situations. The one thing that I don't know if I mentioned before was here in Hollywood, there was a mystery bookstore that was here for many years. Michael Connelly, Dean Koontz, you know, Preston and Child, many people would come to the store, and it's now closed down. And it just goes to show that, you know, a lot of these in your neighborhood and this and that, and it goes to the borders, and we don't know if Barnes & Noble, what they could be doing next, as they last year they were trying to sell. You know, if you're into print and you really are into that kind of thing, support your local independent places that are there to help you make those informed decisions that you might not know, you know, who these authors are, because there's a lot of time when you see somebody. I mean, for instance, there was a book last year called Still Missing, and it was by Chevy Stevens. If she didn't get a lot of play behind her book, no one would know who she probably was, and we had her listed as one of the top best debut authors of 2010. So again, you know, you really want to make sure that you support your local bookstores and talk with them, become friends with them, because they're the ones who are going to know what you read and what comes out and what's going to be good. And that's something that you really want to, you know, stay in touch with. So without further ado, what I want to do is I want to welcome Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child on Suspense Radio today to talk about Gideon Sword. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Wonderful. So now, many books you guys have written together, over, I believe, 15 or 16, and Gideon Sword now is coming out, and you've decided to go with a whole new character that you're going to introduce your audience to. Can you give us a little sneak peek about Gideon Sword?
Well, Gideon Crew is the main character. Lincoln and I have written a number of books featuring an FBI agent named Pendergast, and he's become sort of a cult figure, but Lincoln and I thought we'd do something completely different. So this new character is very different. He's much younger. He's got rather somewhat sketchy morals. He's a bit of a trickster, a social engineer, but at the same time he has a heart as big as the ocean. And it's a brand new series, and we're very happy to tell you that Paramount Pictures has picked up the entire series. They seem to have the idea of doing a Jason Bourne-like series of movies featuring Gideon Crew. So I guess they enjoyed his character.
Well, congratulations. And so when you say series, you're talking probably minimum of 3 books that are going to be here with Gideon's Crew?
Well, we have a plan to write 12 books.
Wow.
And exactly
that's
how many.
That's a plan.
Well, you know, if only I should live so long.
If you're going to do it, go big. That's what I say.
Well, I don't know. I'm probably going to die long before I finish those. You know, we finish those 12 books, but that's the idea anyway. You got to shoot big.
So you got plans for 12, and you couldn't have probably maybe laid out the whole 12 yet, but I'm sure that you're starting to lay out the other ones. You've gotten rave reviews here on Gideon Sword. We thought it was a fabulous, way to, kind of bring out this, new characters to everybody. What kind of emails are you guys receiving in support of the book?
Well, we're getting an awful lot of good email. I mean, I think that people who don't like the book probably aren't emailing us. but we certainly have gotten a lot of good emails. We've gotten great reviews. And, in fact, the book is going to debut at number 3 on the New York Times hardcover bestseller list. So that's somebody besides my mother is buying the book. That's all I can say.
That's always good. But you need mom to – well, you'll probably send her one, which is good. But you always need mom's support, without a doubt.
Well, in the beginning, I think she was the only one who did buy my book. So,
now, is that the highest one of your collaborative books has debuted on the New York Times bestseller list?
It's getting up there. We've had one or two books at number 2. We've never had a number 1 bestseller, but we hope to. It's one of these days.
Never, yeah. And well, now have they announced on press release as far as the Paramount Pictures talking about this, because that would undoubtedly give it a lot more push for people to go out and get the book.
Well, it was in the Hollywood press, Variety and Hollywood Reporter covered it. The Paramount bought the rights for the producer Michael Bay, who did he did The Rock and Transformers and Armageddon. He's a really great producer, so we're excited about that.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're going to, again, Michael Bay is probably one of the hot guys right now in Hollywood, so it's good to have him behind your back doing this.
Well, it is good. He's a man who actually, makes films, and so we're pleased with that. They've got a great screenwriter on it, and so we have high hopes.
Well, your website, I want to let everybody, is PrestonChild.com. They can find out all the information that you guys, and you guys also have 2 separate Facebooks. So you have Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child that you guys update frequently to find out. And you have a lot of fun facts and things like that you guys have on your site, and you split it up. I'm sure you've answered this before, but just for us, people that are just getting met, into you because you've been doing this for so long with Lincoln, how did the collaboration, come to pass way back when?
Well, it was many years ago. I worked at the Museum of Natural History in New York, and Lincoln was an editor at St. Martin's Press. He called me up, and he wanted me to write a book about the museum, which I did, called Dinosaurs in the Attic, and that was my first book. But then Lincoln started pestering me. He wanted a tour of the museum. He wanted to see all these weird areas that the public never sees, the strange collections, the storage rooms full of mummies and that sort of thing. So I gave him a tour late at night when I wouldn't be challenged, because he wasn't authorized to see these things. And he turned to me at the end of this and he said, "Doug, this is the scariest damn museum in the whole world. I mean, this we have got to write a thriller set in this museum." And that became The Relic, which was our first book. And as you know, it was made into a hit movie by Paramount Pictures, a number 1 box office movie, and sort of become kind of a cult classic. But ever since then, we've been writing books together featuring our FBI agent Pendergast, and we've had 13 or 14 bestsellers in a row. So it's been a good run.
Yeah, when you think back, in writing The Relic, because it was a book, it scared the hell out of me because you wrote it so long ago. And I remember watching the movie and reading the book, and then I remember getting Riptide, which I listened to on audio form, which I thought was great. I love listening to those things on audiobook.
Well, thank you. Actually, Riptide's also being made into a movie.
Oh, that was a fabulous the premise, and you know, the suspense behind it at the end was like, you know, one of those things which is good that you never see coming, the old cliche.
Well, we try to surprise our readers. I think one of the things that a good story offers is a surprise. If you see the end coming from a long ways off, it's not going to be fun. You know, we just love to shock the reader, but then the reader says, "My God, I should have seen it. I should have seen that coming, but didn't." Like with Gideon's sword, we have a big surprise at the end. That's going to really throw the reader.
Well, and here's the thing. Since you guys have been doing this for so long and so successful, what do you see as your biggest challenge, not maybe for yourself, but for authors in the future to keep pushing the bar for the reader to get that next big surprise at the end where they just don't see it coming because it hasn't been done yet?
Well, I think it's really important to bring the reader to a wonderful and different and fascinating setting. But that's true. You know, not just make up stuff. Like, for example, Gideon's sword, the final third of the book is set on a very real place in New York City that nobody knows about. It's an island off the coast of New York, part of the city. It's uninhabited. It's about 110 acres, and 1 million people are buried on this island. It's New York City's Pauper's Field or Potter's Field, where indigent people have been buried since the Civil War, and it's covered with ruins. I mean, there's an old Nike missile base. There's an old prison on the island in ruins. But as Lincoln and I researched this island, thinking this is going to make a fabulous setting for a thriller, we discovered that the prisoners who bury the dead bodies on Riker, on Hart Island also are burying something else, even weirder than dead bodies, every day. And I can't tell you what it is because it'll totally ruin the book. But that, when we heard that, we were flabbergasted. And we thought, this is going to be an amazing novel. And that became Gideon's Sword.
And so you went and you guys toured Potter's Field. And so somebody there basically said, here's the history behind it. And here's what's also ongoing today, still happening.
I wish it were that simple. We tried to get permission to go to Hart Island, but it was absolutely off limits. It's part of the New York City prison system, actually.
Okay.
And so Lincoln didn't want to do this. He chickened out. But I went up to City Island in the Bronx. I rented a boat, and I made a guerrilla landing on Hart Island with my wife, who's a professional photographer. And we took a lot of pictures, and gosh darn it, if we didn't get caught. And we were in serious trouble. There was a busload of Rikers Island prisoners, murderers, rapists. You know, these are the people who bury the bodies. We're driving down this ruined road. I couldn't believe that a bus was even on this old road. And prison guards, and they saw us, and the prison guards came after us with their guns drawn. What an experience. But, you know, Lincoln and I really, you know, as I was saying earlier, the reader wants to be transported to a place that they've never been before. And, you know, you just can't make this stuff up. You have to be there. And so, I managed to talk my way out of it. I pretended to be a totally clueless tourist, you know, from New Mexico. Mm-hmm. I whipped out my New Mexico driver's license. And they finally let us go. They asked my wife to erase all the pictures on her camera. And they watched as she was supposedly erasing them. But then after we left, she said, "I didn't erase any pictures." In fact, she continued to take pictures while she was pretending to erase them. So if you go to our website or to Facebook, where I've posted a bunch of these pictures, you can see our adventure on Hart Island. She even took pictures of the guys, unbeknownst to them, who captured us. It's really kind of fun.
Well, that is definitely, you know, taking one for the craft. I don't know of too many people that were almost arrested in researching a book just to get the story and, you know, get the true story behind where you're doing it. You know, probably a lot of them are going to be like Lincoln and say, yeah, I'll just use my imagination because no one can go there anyway to get the real story anyway. So,
yeah. Well, you know, there are a lot of writers who do sort of fudge it, you know.
Yeah.
But they're really good writers. You know, people like Michael Crichton or, you know, Nelson DeMille, you know, some of my favorite writers.
Yeah.
They research what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. And the reader can tell the difference.
And speaking of the research, is the research for you pretty much half the fun of writing a book like Gideon Sword?
It is, yeah. I enjoy it. You know, people say, oh, don't you hire someone to do your research? I don't. I like doing it myself. I really like, because the really weird stuff you find accidentally, and if you hire a researcher, they're going to miss it because they don't know what's, you know, they just are doing what you tell them to do. But, mm-hmm. you know, the weird stuff, like this other thing that they're burying on Hart Island, if I'd ever hired a researcher, they wouldn't have come across that fact.
Yeah.
And the whole book is based on that, so it's really cool.
And that's something that's not revealed because that's until the very end. And I'm not going to say anything, you know, because I know what you're talking about because like I said, we did review the book, and so it is something that I did not know. Now that you've told me that it was actually true.
Well, yeah, people.
So I guess that's what makes it more interesting is now people know. Oh my God, that really is true when they finish it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, it is true. That's the crazy thing. Now maybe we should have said that in the book at the end. Say, you know, this is all true. But well, anyway, it is true. It's very, very weird.
Yeah. Now on another topic, I kind of noticed that you guys had because this is a challenge I think for all authors also in the future is you had an event that was on February 24th that was canceled because Borders was closing. Now, you know, how has the technology as the ebooks and the print and all these things coming together, how do you think that it's going to affect authors more in the future? Is it going to help authors like yourself, or do you think it's going to actually hurt the industry?
Well, I'm a big fan of ebooks, even though I don't really read them myself because I prefer the physical books. But I think any way you can deliver a book to someone to read is good. And, you know, there are not an awful lot of people out there who are reading books. You know, competition from movies, from the computer, computer games, you know, all these things have reduced the number of people reading books. So I think it's great that the ebook is out here. It is true. It's a big financial dislocation, an economic dislocation. You know, Borders went bankrupt because they just couldn't adjust. You know, whereas Barnes & Noble has produced the Nook, which, by the way, the color Nook is fantastic.
I mean, saw that. It is. It's almost like an iPad.
Oh, it's really great. Yeah, it looks just like an iPad, but it only costs $249 or something. It is great. You know, the Kindle's good, too. These are great new ways for people to read books. So I don't know what's going to happen. I think there are going to be big changes. And, you know, in this world, if you can't adjust, you're going down. But, you know, there'll always be readers out there. There'll always be people who love books. So I'm not really that worried.
Yeah, that's the thing that I've been preaching a lot, too, is I think people need to get on kind of the technical bandwagon because, you know, 15 years ago, cell phones were huge. Now they're small. Everybody's got them. CDs, you know, back in 1988 were just coming out. Now CDs have already passed their prime, and it's on MP3s. It didn't take them long to come out. So I think books kind of go the same way, but I agree. Any time you can get a book into somebody's hands, it's good. I just wonder about the competition now that it's so easy for people to go on and just throw their books out there. Is that going to saturate the field and take away from great authors, you know, because people might not be able to differentiate between the two? That's the only thing that scares me, I think.
Well, that's a very good point. You know, it sort of cheapens the whole book by having, you know, so many available. But also what I'm maybe concerned about most of all is piracy. You know, you know, there's always, you know, with music, the music industry was really affected badly by piracy. And so far, you know, I mean, every day I'm getting Google alerts indicating that my books are being pirated. But mm-hmm. I have a tendency to believe that those people are probably not people who'd be buying my books anyway, that they're, you know, maybe don't have any money or whatever. So I'm not really bothered by that. You know, I'm glad that people are reading my books, you know, but piracy could become a big problem. You know, it really could. If everyone's got an e-reader and they, instead of spending $10, they can get the book for free, that's a big temptation.
Yeah, that is one thing that you do fear, because now our magazine, of course, is up on all the sites that we put our magazine together, and people can do it back and forth. And my wife is always, she's a big person, like, you got to go after them. And I'm like, well, you know, if they're reading it, they're reading it, and we'll get people. You just want more people, I guess, to just read it and just, you know, I'm not going to worry too much about it yet. So we'll see. But the one thing that you do have on your website, which is PrestonChild.com, is people are able to read the first couple chapters of Gideon Sword, which is a nice little teaser.
Yeah, that's right. Well, people can read it and say, well, is this a book I'd like to read or not? It gives them a little more information to make a decision.
Right, than just the back of the book is. So, absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of times the blurbs in a book kind of are misleading, you know. They tell you what a great book it is, and then you start reading it, and, ooh, you know, not so good. So it's always good. That's why we post our chapters. We think, you know, let people make their own decision. If they like it, you know, after reading the first chapter, they can buy it. If not, then that's okay.
Well, here you got the Pendergast novels. You got your next book coming out, Cold Vengeance. It's going to be published in August of 2011. Is Pendergast, I'm sure a lot of your fans are going to want to know, is he going to die? Is it going to kill it with the Gideon's crew, or are you going to do maybe the two a year thing?
Well, we're definitely going to continue the Pendergast series. I don't want people, some people started freaking out thinking, oh my God, you're not going to do Pendergast. We're definitely continuing that series. We're going to alternate Gideon crew book with the Pendergast book. And it's just, also as writers, you know, we have a mortal fear of falling into a rut or formula. You know, there are a lot of writers who sort of get comfortable, they fall into a formula, and they start cranking them out. And Lincoln and I really don't want to do that. And that's why we created this whole brand new character, this whole different premise for a series, totally different. We just thought, let's do it. Let's shake ourselves up a bit and challenge ourselves.
Well, I tell you, I have to apologize because I had no idea. I'm in here so enthralled and talking everything else. Lincoln has been on hold. And I didn't bring him on the phone. Lincoln, I apologize. I am so sorry.
I've had fun listening to Doug talk and me every now and then say a few words and, you know, into the air. But keep going,
Lincoln,
Doug. You're doing a good job.
You know, he did say that you were kind of fearful about going to the island. He had to kind of do that on a rogue on his own, you know.
Yeah, I heard the whole thing.
He got arrested for that.
Well, let me see. Let me put my mind back 10 minutes ago to what you were talking about. It's just, he is the adventurous one, and I'm the imaginative one, I guess. And somehow between the two of us, there's a nice chemistry going on. But you know, what you said earlier about research, what I wanted to say is that's where having two authors really helps, because, you know, we each have our different expertise and fields we like and fields we are interested in, and that really helps in terms of being able to really sort of supercharge the book with information.
Right, and I was just mentioning too that, you know, Cold Vengeance is coming out here for Pendergast in August 2nd, 2011. I also want to congratulate you because Douglas told us about Paramount Pictures picking up Gideon's Sword and the Gideon's Crew novel, 12 of them. That's a lot of pressure, I guess, now that you know that 12 are coming. You know, how do you kind of handle all the, you know, success that kind of happened real fast?
Well, we hope the 12 are coming. It really depends on our
readers.
Well,
Douglas is afraid he might not be alive. That's just not right.
I think the fact that the first one is the number 3 bestseller is a good indication. But you know what? That's another place where having two authors helps, because a lot of people would assume that when you have two authors, one writes one chapter, the other one writes the next, and that really isn't the way it works. We each take different sequences, which is why it's very seamless. And then we edit and revise each other's prose. And, you know, we've done solo books, too, plenty of them, so you know what that's like. I mean, if you're writing a solo book and you hit a wall, a creative wall, you don't know where to go, you're kind of by yourself. You have to figure it out on your own. But if you have a writing partner, you can give them a call and say, look, this is where I am, you know, I don't know where to go. And 9 times out of 10, they'll have an idea instantly that you never would have thought of, and it just supercharges you. And there is a lot of pressure involved writing two books a year. You know, we're learning that the hard way, but having somebody else to do it with makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you write the solo books, and between the two, either one can answer, is that, you know, is it Is it just something that you say, hey, I want to take time off because I got this story to do and I just want to go do it, kind of, you know, step away a little bit from, you know, whether it's Pendergast or now Gideon's Crew, and you just kind of focus and take your time on that? Is that kind of what you have to do to just kind of refresh yourself back into the series that you guys are collaborating on?
I don't know. What do you think, Doug?
Well, I don't know. I think that it's good to shake things up a little bit, you know, and to try something different. So I definitely think that there's a synergy that goes on there.
And yeah, I think what it is that you got the dynamic between the two of you, and you bring like so many, you know, so different, not really different styles, but I guess different points of view. And I guess that's what makes you one of the most successful duos, got to be right now in writing, pretty much in history. I don't think that there's one that's, you know, been as much as successful as you guys had. And I don't know if that's what you envisioned when you first thought of the Relic, Lincoln, as he brought you into the back of, you know, the American History Museum. You know, what did you really envision when you first thought of all that?
Well, I had very high respect for Doug's writing ability as a nonfiction writer, and I'd always wanted to write novels myself. I'd written a bunch of terrible ones in high school, and after leaving publishing, my interest in writing sort of returned, and I thought that Doug was, there was probably a very good chance he'd be a good fiction writer as well. He certainly had the imagination for it. And so we started writing Relic on a lark, basically. We love the museum, and we had some great ideas, we thought, for a techno-thriller set there, but we never... Well, I guess we sort of thought in the back of our minds it might get published, but myself, having been an editor and just seeing how many manuscripts went across my desk and how few of them actually got published, I thought, well, we're pretty good writers. You know, we can probably get an agent easily because of our connections, but, you know, once we get to that point, it's going to stand or fall on its own merits. And, you know, Relic was rejected dozens of times, and at one point, Doug gave up and went off to New Mexico to write nonfiction, and I gave up and went back to working full-time at MetLife, and it was just by the hard work of our agent, and I guess the gods of literature or popular literature, that we managed to get published eventually.
See, and that's something that authors would be interested to know, is even though you were an editor at a major publishing house, you still had to take the hard road in order to just get yourself published, even though you knew the behind the scenes of what people look for. And you still had to take the hard road. And doesn't that just make all your success that much sweeter now, knowing that it did take that kind of hard road to make it there?
Well, the funny thing is what you just said about knowing what it makes to make success by reading so many books. You know, a lot of editors, I think, cynically think they can write the world's most popular novel because they put all these elements that they know make a good book together and stir it up and heat it up to boiling. And that just doesn't work, you know, because it's a cynical exercise, and readers are not stupid. They know when you're writing from the heart and when you're just writing to make a buck. And we wrote a story that we would like to read ourselves, and I think that that's what helped to make Relic into a bestseller. And it's true, being an editor myself, I knew we could get an agent. You know, that wasn't a problem, and that's a huge first step for most writers. They don't have that advantage. But once the agent got into the hands of an editor at a publishing house, then it had to, you know, make its own way in the world, and that's where we basically lucked out, I think.
Well, kind of last things between you guys. I mean, as far as we know what's going on between the collaboration, but do you have anything going on outside of the collaboration solo that you guys like to talk about that's going to happen in the future?
Well, I wrote a nonfiction book called The Monster of Florence, which was the story of a serial killer who murdered young lovers in the hills around Florence, Italy, and was never caught. And that's being made into a movie starring George Clooney for Fox 2000, the studio. So that should be that'll be coming out in a couple of years.
And Doug and I both have individually series characters of our own thrillers, and you know, we will continue with them in the fullness of time as well.
So, yeah, Lincoln, do you have anything that you're writing on right now coming up in the future outside?
Not in the immediate future. Like I said, Doug and I both have novels. I have one that'll come out that will feature my main character, who's an enigmologist. He's like a supernatural sleuth, and he's been in two prior books, and eventually he'll be in a book to be titled The Third Gate, which takes place in the swamp called the Sud, south of Egypt, where the first Egyptian pharaoh was buried, and very strange and terrible things are happening to the group who's trying to dig him up.
Absolutely. Sounds fascinating. I mean, see, that's the thing. I mean, I just can't get my head around some of those ideas. My brain does just not get wired that way. I think that's why I like to read. I don't write. I just like to read and get enjoyed. That's just what I do.
Well, that's good.
We need people like you.
That's why we started the magazine, to get more people that are interested in reading and stories. I mean, that's because it's the most popular genre. Suspense thriller genre is the most popular genre. But we need more readers.
Absolutely. Well, that's good. You're doing your part. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I'll tell you what, Lincoln, I do apologize. I totally forgot to click the button to bring you on the line, so I am sorry.
It's not a problem.
Your book is Gideon's Sword, Preston Child, going to come out, #3 New York Times bestseller hardcover. You guys have separate Facebook pages, Douglas Preston, Lincoln Child. And when does that come out, the New York Times bestseller? When does that?
A week from Sunday,
Monday?
Right, Doug?
Yeah, that's right. It'll be on the list starting on Sunday.
On Sunday, because the book came out February 22nd. Everybody can get it now because it's in all the formats. You're everywhere in all the formats.
That's right.
All right. Well, guys, thank you again so much for coming on. I appreciate it. I would love to have you back on, Lincoln and Doug. This time I will not screw it up. I can promise you that.
No, I think you should screw it up. That was great. It gave me a chance to talk.
Yeah, next time muzzle Doug and I'll do all the talking.
This time I'll do that. I'll remember the area codes and I'll remember which one to not screw up on.
All right, guys.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Sure.
Thank you.
Bye.
You too.
So, everybody, again, that was Douglas Preston mainly. I screwed this whole thing up. And Lincoln Child, which was great to have on, both of them, their book, Gideon's Sword, their website, PrestonChild.com. You can see all the collaboration, you know, probably 15 books they've done collaborating. I have not really counted. This is a new character coming out called Gideon Crew. But their Pendergast novels, if you're a fan of that, well, another one will be out in August of 2011 called Cold Vengeance. But Gideon's Sword is the one that is getting all the rave. Paramount Pictures picked it up, like they said. 12, they hope, in the series here of Gideon's Crew. So it's going to be something to definitely follow. Get it right now on Book One with Gideon's Sword, available everywhere. PrestonChild.com. You can follow them on Facebook. They each have their own. Douglas Preston, Lincoln Child, you can follow them. And go to the website, see their blogs, contact information, the whole nine yards. So it's been a great day. We've been busy here, two shows. Lisa Gardner was first on 7:30 this morning. Wow, it seems like, 5 hours ago that happened. And then we just were so honored to have Douglas Preston, Lincoln Child on. And so, everybody, I want to thank you all for joining us today. Remember, get out there no matter how you read. I don't care if you have to scratch it off in, Flintstone stone. Get something, read something, write something, create something, do something. Have a great weekend. See you all later.